Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. For homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in, visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports to the program. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gents? How you doing this morning?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Rex Road is living his best life. He gave us a wildlife report in the last segment about coyotes in the neighborhood. So he's expanding his portfolio.
Nice. Getting to that age now where we're going to talk about the animals we see around our house and the park, the car that parks in front of the house that we don't know whose car it is, and it annoys us, and we're constantly looking out the window. I'm at that age, Don says. I worry too much about who parks in front of our house.
Got to keep an eye
out. Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. The annoying neighbors. If a car's there longer than a day, I'm like, it's been abandoned in front of our house, and I'm trying to get somebody to come get it.
Yeah, what sort of surveillance is going on out here? Got to get to the bottom of it. Yeah. So, Charles, the A.J. Brown situation in Philadelphia, obviously some interest to hear from A.J. Brown's former team of what his future could look like. What do you make of what that is going to – what's the resolution on that's going to be? Is he going to get traded? Are they going to work it out in Philadelphia? How do you feel about where things currently stand between A.J. Brown and the Eagles?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're gonna find a lot of traction on that in the next couple of weeks now that we're heading to the combine. I the thing that I think is interesting about A.J. Brown is, I've been asked this before, is what's the replacement? I mean, it's not like they don't need him. He's a primary one for them. You know, there's been a time that the Philadelphia Eagles, he has been a centerpiece of that offense. And, frankly, they don't have anybody on the depth chart who's capable of moving into the number one slot. Now, look, obviously there's issues there between, AJ, his personality. I think obviously with head coach Nick Sirianni, it doesn't help. They keep swapping out offensive coordinators every year, quarterback Jalen Hurts. So I think there's a couple of different factors here. It's number one, what ultimately do you think you can get for him, in trade? And maybe that's, I think for Howie, he'd be looking for a couple of draft picks, bare minimum. It's arguable. I don't know, you're probably looking at like a third in terms of what his value is, like a third and then maybe another middle round pick. It also depends who comes to the table for him, but I would think maybe a third and a fourth, maybe a third and a fifth, maybe a fifth that can graduate to a fourth. Maybe you can, if you really, really push it and there are a lot of suitors, you can get a third that can graduate depending on what his production is next season or maybe where your team goes. But I think he's probably a third and a fifth type of guy. I don't know that the Eagles feel like right now. Now they're early in the process, and I think it's going to be a pretty deep wide receiver draft in terms of first round type of candidates. I don't know that the Eagles feel like there's a replacement that's obvious for an AJ Brown right now, and we'll find out in the combine, especially once teams start meeting with agents. You're going to find out whether or not there are going to be other wide receivers that are potentially available on the trade market. You're going to find out, whether they feel like there's somebody who they could draft and step in and play a role pretty immediately. But right now, I feel like it's still up in the air. I think there's just a lot of conversations that need to be had. And I haven't gotten a sense. I spoke to somebody from the Eagles about a week ago, and I did not get the sense that there was this rush to just get him off the roster as soon as possible. But, Howie Roseman will definitely listen. And, if he feels like there's a solid alternative there to AJ and they can move him, I think that's something that definitely we'll start to hear the traction on probably in the next week to 10 days.
So Charles, we were complaining this week, as we often do, about many things, but the Wednesday, Thursday, the Australia situation, next year, the NFL, and as Robbie pointed out, just the fact that you have these two great teams in a division who are having one of them's having a home game in Australia. It just seems like a terrible idea. Let me just ask you a big picture. We all know this, obviously the NFL is trying to go everywhere, but like, what is the end game here in terms of, or maybe it's not the end game, but what's the next step in all this stuff? Like, how close are we to the possibility of teams that are actually in this league that are in another country?
Well, first off, I'd say Australia, this is very experimental. Like, of all the international games, this is the one that I could see not surviving it. Like, let's see what this looks like, because
I mean, it's
it's such
ridiculous.
a, yeah, I mean, really, I mean, it's such a massive time change, obviously, for, even though the Rams and the 49ers on the West Coast, you're talking about a significant time change in terms of just the travel, what it takes. I mean, if you talk to teams about, this kind of distance, like you ask, like, what does this look like? They'll tell you, like, okay, you got to get there as early as physically possible prior to the game. You'd love to be there if you could. If you play, let's say, a Thursday night game prior, or if it's opening, and I'm talking about like years past when you talk about, okay, what's it like if you want to go play in China? What's it like if you want to play in Australia? They tell you, like, it's got to be to start the season, because you got to get there as early as you possibly can, and then you've got to have a bye week afterward. Or there's such an expansive time that it's going to disrupt physically how your players probably play in that game, and then how they play when you come back, because you have the entire time change when you come back and reacclimating. And it's kind of, at least the conversations I can recall having the last couple of years, it was always this, like, you're looking at potentially disrupting your team physically for maybe 3 weeks, maybe a month, because guys are, especially when there's a massive time change like this. I mean, teams will tell you, they've done studies on this, like, players play slower, and it happens when they come back. There's just sometimes a lethargy that's involved. And so it's like, how can you sports science your way out of this? Like, what can you do from a sports science standpoint to try and protect from this? So I still think the Australia game is really, it's just a test. I think they're going to see what this looks like, and I think if it's horrific, or you have, both of these organizations saying, like, look, this is just untenable, I could see this being kind of a one-shot deal for the NFL, unless they can find a really creative way around it in terms of, like, what they're trying to achieve here. I think when Robert Kraft comes out, and this was a few weeks back, and he says, what was the phrase he used? We're going to push like the Dickens to, expand into overseas markets. I think Kraft said what the reality is, what owners are talking about right now, and he talked about it through the prism of the salary cap. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, look, if we want the salary cap to keep going up and up and up, the players have to basically be our partner in that. And what that means is, we need this 18th game in the regular season. The reason we need that 18th game is because we need every single NFL team to play an international game every year. So you have, 16 international games. Well, that's your 33rd team right there. That's your, you ask if there's going to be a team that plays overseas. Yeah, all of them. But they'll create another NFL team in the aggregate in these overseas games. There will be certain staple markets, the UK, I think Germany, Western European locations will definitely be what they consider to be their bread and butter. But they'll lean into, where can we get additional television contracts? Where can we get additional revenue streams overseas? And I think one of the things that Kraft was getting at, and at least this is what I felt when I listened to him, was, I think they're starting to wonder, NFL owners are, how much more can we squeeze out of the U.S. domestic market? Like, how much more money can we really get out of television contracts in the U.S. and, all these other, the ancillary gambling revenue streams and the merchandising and all this? Like, I think they feel like, what happens if we get a little toppy and we start to see revenue production or increases in revenue year after year? What if that starts to slow down? Well, we have to go elsewhere to get that
No, you know
money, and
what?
that
Hold
means.
on. You know what they can do is not be greedy a-holes. Like, this is one of the most destructive mindsets in human existence, is that if it's not growing, then it's a problem. No, dude, you have more money than anyone. Shut up. Sorry, go
And
ahead.
I don't listen, I don't disagree with that, but you also have a commissioner who, I mean, how many years ago was it that he said we want to hit $25 billion in annual revenue? At the time, you're like, that is an insane number. Well, guess what? You're getting there now. And even though you dealt with, you know, going through the economic, you know, drawback of COVID and the pandemic, you know, they've still gotten back, they've clawed back to that number. That's just not the mindset. I hear what you're saying, and I understand that it frustrates players, it frustrates fans, but that's certainly not the mindset of these owners. There's a reason why we're going to see the Seattle Seahawks sell for some insane record-breaking price. It's because everyone looks at these franchises like they're, I mean, they're crown jewels. They're money makers in terms of if you're not cranking out the revenue on an annual basis, your equity is growing at an astronomical rate where, you know, you might buy a team for $10 billion this year. Well, 20 years from now, that team could, and I mean this realistically, that team could be worth $25 billion in, you know, 20 years. It could be worth more than that. You know, but I also think that you have owners who are sitting there staring at, okay, what's a quarterback make now in the NFL? You know, what's a wide receiver make? Now we have, it used to be, you know, there were three prime position, you know, quarterback, left tackle, and corner. That's all we pay. That's not true anymore. I mean, they pay almost the entire, I mean, there's guys up and down the roster who get paid now, and a good quarterback is going to cost you $50 million plus every single year now. A good wide, like a top end wide receiver is going to cost you $30 million, $35 million plus every single season. So I think they're also saying we have to be able to support, you know, as revenue grows, the salary cap grows. Well, we don't want this, you know, players don't want the salary cap to stagnate. Okay, well then you need to have an 18th game. You need to have a fan base and a and television contracts that open in other international markets. And they've been obsessed for, I'm talking decades, with the international success of like the EPL, the English Premier League. They've been looking at these, you know, soccer franchises and saying, look, they have fan bases. They're worldwide. They're, you know, they are truly a worldwide sport. That's where we want to get. And that's really what a lot of this push is. I mean, I remember talking to Jerry Jones about China, you know, like, I don't even remember how long ago that conversation had. I mean, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And, you know, that's something they were already thinking about just because of the sheer numbers of the people in China, because of what the NBA, what China did for the NBA. Well, that's, we're trying to achieve all these things and figure out how to grow financially the pie. And I'm just telling you, and I don't think it gets talked about enough. I do think there is some concern in the league about how much more money can we really get out of the continental, you know, U.S. states. You know, we have to go beyond North America, and we really need to start maxing out, you know, what our bottom line is in South America and Central America and, you know, in Europe. And I still, you know, I think Australia is ultimately dubious, but you asked, and I think there's a suggestion that there's some stupidity in really trying to push two teams that are going to play a divisional game that should be playoff teams where this is going to matter, and it's probably going to matter in January of, you know, 2027, to play this game is a little bit absurd, but this just shows the lengths that they're starting to push this.
So on the Kenneth Walker front, Charles, I mean, Schefter put it out, I think, earlier this week that the Seahawks are unlikely to use their tag on him. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to hit free agency. So what do you think happens with Kenneth Walker and Seattle? Do you think he actually makes it to free agency?
Well, I can tell you they definitely want to keep him. I mean, there's no question about that. But I also think there's some of the appetite to keep him is what ultimately do we feel like his, you know, his market is going to be. And so I think, you know, look, the tag, we have a $14 million tag. I think most teams are looking at, especially with a running back who, frankly, a year ago, I mean, prior to the 2025 season, the complaint inside the franchise was, look, we just need this guy to be available to us over the course of a season, every single game. We need, you know, we need his health to be there. You don't want to pay that guy after at least, you know, not, you don't want to treat him like he's Saquon Barkley after one season, right? I mean, and let's be realistic. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks, they figured out their running game. It took them half the season to really get to the point where they're cranking. And you also have, you know, Charbonnet there, who's, you know, he's going to come back eventually. Obviously, there's an injury that impacts that situation. But, you know, I think there's going to be some hang on, sorry about that. I got somebody trying to hit me right now. do I think there's going to be some interest in Kenneth Clark? I think there's going to be, you know, modest interest. I think, you know, Breece Hall. I will say this, man, it's a deep running back market. If you need a running back, there's going to be a number of guys that are going to be available. I think, you know, and that's good because I don't think it's a great running back class in terms of the NFL draft. But I think basically what you'll see is they're going to go to the combine. They're going to talk to Kenneth Walker's agent. And Kenneth Walker's agent's going to shop him around. They're going to find out what kind of money is available there. And then, you know, if he wants to return to the Seahawks, they'll probably try to find a middle ground. And the Seahawks absolutely, I think, are open to that. I think they're like, look, find your best deal. If we could land on a contract where it's, you know, 3 years and we're guaranteeing you, you know, $24 million, I think they would be happy to get that done. But ultimately, it'll be, you know, really what Kenneth Walker's agent finds the opportunity is elsewhere. And again, because it's a deep class, I think the Seahawks are, they're assuming there's going to be a little more headwinds for Kenneth Walker in terms of finding the deal that they're looking for, just because of the fact that there's a number of running backs out there that are going to be attracted to teams. I mean, like Breece Hall, even with his injury history, and that's another thing too, like, Kenneth's got an injury history. Breece Hall's got an injury history. That's going to impact, I think, you know, some of that interest. Like, hey, we've got other options. And also, you know, do we know we're going to be able to keep you healthy for more than, you know, a season at a time? So if the Titans are interested, you know, and they were to belly up with an offer that, you know, Seattle sits there and says, look, we're not giving you $30 million guaranteed. That's not going to happen. I think that would nose out Seattle. It all depends on what the guaranteed money ultimately looks like.
So before, you know, we started talking about these gluttonous, greedy NFL owners, I was actually, which has got me pissed off like more than anything as I think about it. I was a little irritated today, Charles, with, you know, the sort of every year around draft time, we get the, oh, you get a clue. This guy's clearly better than this guy. Whatever, you know, it's like we should all have a certain level of humility and understand that we're all ultimately going to be wrong all the time. Which brings me to someone on the text line asked me, Gover asked me to ask you this question. It's a good question. Now, I have said on this show how at whatever combine we were at together, what, in 2005 or something, 04, you were like, dude, Jamarcus Russell just threw it 80 yards on his knees. He's going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. That's basically what you told me.
Sure.
But beyond that one,
sure.
Your worst player evaluation draft takes, what comes immediately to mind?
Oh, man, you got to be kidding me.
I mean, just, yeah, you know, a couple that come right to the top of the brain, you know.
I'll tell you what. Give me yours first. Let me look. Let me pull up some.
Well, I mean, I was bullish.
Yours were.
I mean, I was bullish, and I'm sure you and I probably argued about this. But who remembers the '90s? I mean, I was bullish that Ryan Leaf was going to be better than Peyton Manning. I mean, I was so. Yeah, I was so certain of that one. I mean, I've got a ton. You know, Bryce Young's going to be one of the greatest of all time. He's getting better, by the way. Tua. He's getting better. But, yeah. I mean, yeah. I love Tua. I was like, Tua? Oh, Tua? Burrow? Give me Tua all day. Are you kidding me? You know, I mean, you can go on and on.
Okay, so I'll give you some let's work backwards here. I was certainly higher in 2024. I did not think J.J. McCarthy would be this sort of injury mess that he's been, and just like the total, like, you know, he got injured, and then I think he showed up the comment. He was like, he was between like between 210 and 220, which was crazy because he didn't play near that in Michigan. He played at like 200 pounds at Michigan. And I remember thinking, like, okay, like, are they going to be able to keep the weight on? He got hurt and lost a ton of weight. And it's just, it's been like every bad thing that was sort of associated with him has already come to fruition. That one, I clearly thought far too much of him. Let's see. I'm kind of focusing this through quarterbacks. I thought Trevor Lawrence was going to be, I really thought he was going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. And I didn't think it was going to take time. Like, Trevor Lawrence really arrived this year. It was ridiculous because I thought he's going to show up in the 2021 season and he's going to be this, and was driven by what I saw at Clemson, but also what I, you know, every team that you talk to truly believed this was going to be the, we talk about generational quarterbacks every draft. It's almost stupid how much we talk about it. But that was the guy. Like, everyone's like, nope, he's going to be Peyton Manning. He's going to be, you know, the next, he's going to be a quarterback who wins 5-6 Super Bowls. He's going to be, you know, he's going to rewrite every record book, you know, every record by the time he's 40. So for the fact that, you know, it's taken this long for him to kind of turn a corner, and I still think you question, like, is this real? We don't know. Trey Lance, good Lord. Trey Lance, a bad one. Like, I don't know why. It's funny when you look back at it because you see all the mistakes, like, in your thought process. And you get over
with him, it's probably easier, right? To see.
Well,
the
mistakes. Yeah. The problem is everybody talks to you about ceilings. You know, there's a, now look, you can get to the downside of every prospect, no matter how good a player is. If you go hunt for negative opinions, you can find them. It's not a problem. But you tend to hear, you know, the best case scenarios. That really is what teams lock onto. And when, like, Kyle Shanahan is locking onto Trey Lance and you're hearing, you know, this is how this guy can run it. This is how he can throw it. He has every tool you could possibly ask for. And, oh, by the way, the way we're looking at the fact that he didn't play a ton of high school basketball or football, he didn't play a ton of college football, it's all untapped potential. Well, yeah, now looking back, you're like, oh, what the heck were we thinking? This guy didn't play football. And then, like, and we thought he could be the third pick in the draft and reshape, you know, the position because of what he brought to the table. And he's just been, you know, it's not abject failure. He's still in the league, but for what the 49ers ultimately invested to take that shot, I mean, was definitely one that was a mess for me. Jamarcus, well, I hate the fact that you bring this up, but I know that I said unbelievably good things about Jamarcus.
Oh, you wrote it too. We can find the Yahoo story.
I mean, no, the funny thing is I have a story that I wrote where I said, and I actually got credit for this for a lot of years. I said, the Raiders cannot take Russell. They got to take Calvin Johnson. I wrote, there's no way you absolutely have to take Calvin Johnson. At one, probably one of the better calls I've ever made. But it was not because I didn't believe in Russell's talent. It was because I thought it's an organization that ruins everybody that comes through, particularly quarterbacks. So you can't put a guy in this situation where ultimately they're going to ruin him. And I think there was some of that. I also think obviously some of it was Jamarcus. There were things that happened in his personal life. I mean, there's just a lot of litany of things that really all came together at once. But I do remember his workout was, you know, I've never seen teams. I mean, John Elway was losing his mind over what Jamarcus Russell was able to do. It was, you know, I still remember. I mean, you could look it up. There are clearly quotes that are still out there where you had executives saying it was the greatest workout I've ever seen from a quarterback in terms of a pro day. And again, as we've gone on, I've learned pro days are ridiculous. Don't put too much, like, there was an era where we put way too much stock into pro days. There was an era where we put way too much stock into Kyle Bowler throwing the ball through the uprights on his knees from however, you know, yards out. Like, it, over time, we've started to thankfully kind of strip away some of the ridiculousness. But that said, Trey Lance was not that long ago. And how on earth did NFL teams look at a player and go, he barely played any quarterback snaps in high school. He barely played any quarterback snaps in college. And we think that this guy is worthy of, you know, a multitude of picks to get into position to draft him. And then
some of the smartest people in the league, by the way.
I was going to say, not only NFL teams, like, objectively great organization in San Francisco.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're still okay, even after doing that. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that just shows you again, and I complain about Kyle Manunga last season. Like, all season long, I was complaining to Andrew Siciliano. I'm like, this is stupid. Like, how did teams screw this up so much? And, you know, Andrew's like, well, it's his size, the size. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. It's his size. But watch him play. And then that's what he looked like when he played at Rutgers. I'm like, I get the size, but he was going to be a productive player. And he goes at the end of the draft. And then you look at, you know, Brock Purdy. You know, even Kyle admitted, like, first off, like, they don't get any credit for it. Like Kyle doesn't, like, try to take any credit for that pick. He's like, I didn't even know what the guy physically, like, in person. I had no idea. He's like, Kyle said he was surprised when Brock Purdy showed up, because he was like, he was just kind of a bigger guy. His frame was bigger than I thought once we had already drafted him, and he showed up in our building. And I'm like, okay, so clearly you really, like, you had some severe limitations. But then he went later, and he told me about watching, I think it was actually Clemson tape, and he was looking like a year or two later at some Clemson players, and it was an Iowa State game, and Purdy was killing him. Like, Purdy was just had a fantastic game. He's like, I don't know why I didn't see this. Like, he's like, I don't know why this didn't catch my eye years ago, you know, when we end up drafting the kid at the end of the first round. But it just shows you can absolutely, you have a good organization. They take a guy who they think is going to be everything, and then they take a guy with the last pick in the draft who they don't expect to be anything. And they're the polar opposites of each other. And the one thing I will say, for as long as I've covered this league, is that there's so much more art to drafting players than the science has gotten better. And I think analytics has gotten better. And there's certain things that players do in college that they'll carry over. If your quarterback, like Sean Payton says, if your quarterback takes sacks in college, you're going to do it in the pros. If your quarterback returns it over in college, you're going to do it in the pros. If you're running back who fumbles in college, you're going to do it in the pros. If you break tackles, you're going to do it in the pros. But you just don't know from a mindset what a guy really has inside him. And we just saw with Sam Darnold, man. Like, I'm sorry, but you don't get through that many organizations if you're there. Like, if you're fully there, even if you're on a bad roster, teams find a way to hang on to you, you know, waiting for that to ultimately come out. And it took us, you know, what, five franchises before we figured out that Sam Darnold could be this player that he became with, you know, the Minnesota Vikings. And even they let him walk out the door, which now looks like an atrocious decision. So
it sure does.
Yeah. Great examples of how hard this is.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Christmas. It's funny because people are always like, the draft's like Christmas. And I'm like, yeah. And like a year later, you hate your gift. like, what did we do? Like, I'm so happy to open this. And now I'm like, how can we get rid of this as quickly as possible? So it's the fun of the process, though. And it's why it will never be, you know, perfected. I mean, look, guys, what was I saying about Tavondre Sweat when I came in? You want to go back to that?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? You know, like.
Sure. He was great at Texas.
You and I both.
Last year.
We were standing there in practice. I remember the two of us were like, oh my God, this guy's just going to wreck like every, you know, wreck offensive fronts. And, you know, he and Simmons together and all these things. And then, you know, in application, and a lot goes into it, but in application, things change. And now I'm sure you guys have had the conversation about, like, does he even fit now? Like, what do you do with him?
Exactly.
Yep. 100%.
That's exactly where we are with him. Charles? Awesome stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this week, and we'll have you next week to discuss Rex Rhodes' favorite event of the year, the NFL Combine. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I think we lost Charles.
Charles? Charles, you okay?
Charles, did somebody?
Sorry, no, I'm here. I fat cheeked it again, okay. The mute button.
Just making sure nobody was out front. We got you.
Yeah, I'm tacking the dude out front, man. Take it easy.
Joe, you gonna be there? You're not gonna be there, right? I know you're not gonna be there.
No, man. I mean, I'd like. I mean, hanging out with you is my favorite part. But everything else, no, I won't be there. But I'm sorry.
You're gonna miss a lot of bad calls I'm about to make in the next week or so. We can get to that next Thursday.
That's right, Charles. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. Take care,
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us. Here on the program every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment there. The Kenneth Walker thing's interesting, Joe. I mean, he basically was like, you know, market value is going to be interesting. There's somewhat of an injury history there. Same thing with Breece Hall. How much are these teams going to be willing to pay for these running backs? And he outright said, he's like, you know, if the Titans, with the cap space that they've got, can get to a place with the guaranteed money that they're comfortable going to, that Seattle just looks at and says, you know, we love Kenneth Walker. We don't know if we love him that much. Then maybe he does make it to free agency. That part of it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, and he would be, you know, obviously heavily pursued. Like Charles said, this is definitely a running back, potentially really loaded running back free agent class to go ahead and get out there and upgrade. And even if you're paying high market, if you've got cap space, certainly like the Titans do, it's a drop in the bucket.
The interesting thing that we didn't get to, Charles, that we might get to it with him next week. I'm going over so ESPN.com has come out with, you know, this free agent list and the best team fits. Like Matt Bowen put this out there, for example, like Alec Pierce is the number 6 free agent that he's got on the list, and his best team fit is the Titans. So it's like, yeah, get Alec Pierce in there, that'll work. I am very fascinated to see what happens with Mike Evans. So, you know, Mike Evans been in Tampa his whole career, and he finally ran into some injury issues this last year that broke that streak he had going of 1,000-yard seasons. I mean, it was a rough year for Mike Evans this past year at 32. The fit that they've got for him here is Buffalo, which would be interesting to see Evans leave Tampa, where he spent his entire career to this point, and he ends up in Buffalo with Josh Allen and the Bills. I mean, there's no doubt Josh Allen, the Bills, need help at wide receiver. Like, is Mike Evans that guy at what will be age 33 with the mileage he's got at this point, 12 years into his career?
Yeah, that will be really interesting. It'd be so weird to see him somewhere but Tampa. But, man, imagine if he could, if he can be healthy and he's got some more gas in the tank. I think he's still, even like last year, still look like Mike Evans to me at times. I mean, a full season of him, still a pretty good version of himself with Josh Allen. That's a huge need for the Bills, obviously. I think that's one thing that, obviously, the Keon Coleman pick just hasn't really worked out for them. And they need to figure out a way to get him somebody who's a real threat. Now, I would say, you know, maybe that's through the draft too, but Mike Evans would be intriguing there.
It feels like a good fit.
It does.
To me. Buffalo,
I thought
there.
So too. It's,
yeah.
Red
zone.
Very interesting.
Back shoulder stuff from Allen. Big target. I think they're lacking that. And Evans wants to go somewhere to win, right?
Yes.
So for him, you would think that'd be intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're winning in Tampa to a point, but not, yeah, like they just don't look like a contender anytime soon.
Right.
And so, yeah, I feel like he's probably ring chasing if he gets out there and goes anywhere else.
You would think so. Now, they did have a conversation. I forget who the guy was. He was on with Cowherd. I think it was yesterday about Mike Evans and about how, you know, he's never won one in Tampa. And it's like, well,
who was that?
They actually did win a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. I don't know if you remember this, but they did win one in Tampa Bay.
Oh yeah, well that was Jason McIntyre, right?
Yeah, some guy named Tom Brady was the quarterback. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, he hasn't sniffed one over there. So you know, you gotta get out of there. It's like, dude, do you think that this is like the 1980s Steve DeBerg quarterback Bucks? Like they wasn't that long ago. They won it. Yeah. Wow. Whew.
That was as good as Skip Bayless. Did you see Skip Bayless's hot take yesterday after the Olympic game?
3-on-3 NHL, what do you think?
Yeah, 3-on-3 overtime would be interesting. NHL, are you listening? It's like, oh, good. That's about on brand.
Skip, are you watching a hockey game ever in your life? My goodness.
You know, I think the NHL really ought to consider this 3-on-3 thing.
Here's a thought, Gary Bettman. Yeah, my, we've got some real
good day for sports media takes yesterday.
Yeah, and we've been talking about our terrible takes on the draft. Here's a take, by the way. I'm just going to read this real quick. Matthew Nashville says Rich Eisen's son apparently gave his hot takes and said number one take is that Cam Ward will be a top 5 QB in 2026. I have no idea how old Rich Eisen's son is, how much he knows about football, but hey, if it happens, we got to remember to credit Rich Eisen's son.
There we go. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Final segment of the day coming up next. We'll have more reaction to what Charles Robinson had to say. Get back into the wild Olympic hockey day yesterday, college basketball as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Joe, a wild day of Olympic hockey yesterday. We had three games go to overtime. Canada on the brink. They win it in overtime yesterday against Czechia. USA and Sweden. USA was up 1-0 for the majority of the game. Sweden ties it late. And Quinn Hughes with the game winner for the Americans in overtime, which means it will be Canada and Finland in one semifinal coming up tomorrow. And the United States taking on Slovakia. So the gold medal game dream that we've had of the USA and Canada is still very much alive, but almost removed from us on two different fronts yesterday, Rex. So a pretty wild day on the Olympic hockey front.
No doubt. And look, I'm really glad they both pulled it out, frankly. I'm sitting there watching, you know, this Canada game. It's like, man, not only did, like, I was like, this would really suck if we don't get this game, but also it's like, oh, the meltdown in Canada. If this team doesn't get to the semis and loses this game, pretty interesting that, you know, Mitch Marner, I made the joke earlier, like, you know, in Toronto, I assume they're celebrating Mitch Marner's name. But, you know, Quinn Hughes and Mitch Marner, both guys who have sort of, you know, had stuff, they've been questioned in different ways, right? Coming up with those monster plays. In the, which I agree with you too, the 3-on-3, it doesn't seem right for that to, it's no. I love it in NHL regular season, and even as we've talked about, it's even kind of getting, the possession has become more of a priority, so we have fewer like fun plays in 3-on-3 now in NHL regular season, but it doesn't seem right. But if that's what it takes to keep giving us, because like if I'm an NHL owner, I'm like, dude, we're not doing 5-on-5 overtime all until somebody wins. I will get players killed if that happens. So no, you can't have that. But it still does seems wrong.
All that's well and good. I swear to you, if the U.S. and Canada gold medal game comes down to 3-on-3 overtime on Sunday, I'm gonna lose my mind.
I thought I saw the gold medal.
What about a shootout?
Will be 5-on-5.
Is it okay?
Yeah,
I haven't looked that far ahead.
Really?
I'm pretty sure I saw it. The overtime rules change as it progresses. Maybe okay. It's not I don't know if it's the time that's different or it's the 5-on-5 versus the 3-on-3.
Okay.
Interesting.
But it does shift as they get to the medal games. I'll have to double check.
What a weird tournament. They've changed so many things. Like, you can't even keep up with all the stuff they're doing here.
Okay. We'll see what happens on that front. I do not want 3-on-3 overtime just to decide the gold medal. But maybe it won't. We'll see what happens there. By the way, as multiple people have pointed out on the text line, Joe, we have more Georgia football players being arrested for reckless driving and speeding in Athens. It is amazing to me how often that has happened with that football program. And apparently it's just gonna keep on happening. Like, nothing's ever gonna change. Like, it's reckless driving and speeding all around in Georgia football.
Yeah, it's just so weird. Like, it's gotten to the point where it's weird. I mean, this is one of those things that's like, you can go look around other programs. I mean, there's like stuff like this happens. You know, young people, especially with awesome cars, and there's probably more like awesome cars now than ever before in college athletics. Not that there weren't any before, but probably more now than ever before.
Yeah.
But like, why there is it such a thing? Why at that particular place? It just like, I can't think of like a reasonable explanation for that.
I don't know. It's been going on for years at this point. So I guess that's just what it's going to be down there in Athens. Kirby not running a tight ship when it comes to the driving part of it. By the way, Kuharski has uncovered the names of all the children of Rich Eisen moving forward here. So we'll keep an update on their draft takes, their hot takes in the NFL.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thanks, Paul. Really appreciate you moving in. Xander. So apparently it's Xander. About 15 or so. I mean, to be fair, we let Brennan Rexroad give his hot takes.
That's true.
On our show. What didn't he have, like, the Lions will go undefeated for the next four seasons or something like that, right?
That's right. That's going to do it for us today on the program. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.